This is the Everything Financial Radio program. I am your host, Dennis Tubergen. Glad you decided to tune in today. I have a couple of really special guests today joining me during the second half of today's program will be mega best-selling author Robert Kiyosaki. Many of you are familiar with Mr. Kiyosaki's work in the Rich Dad, Poor Dad series. It was a pleasure to catch up with him this past week. And as I said, he will be joining me on the second part of today's program. Joining me momentarily will be William Engdahl. Mr. Engdahl is a global geopolitical analyst. We're going to talk to him about the world economy and what he sees lying ahead and how it might affect you and your money. So a lot of really good information on today's program from a couple of really bright guests. And before I get to my conversation with Mr. Engdahl, let me remind you that we do have a couple of Social Security maximization workshops coming up during the month of June. On June the 16th, we'll be at Stonewater Country Club. That's on Kalamazoo in Caledonia Township. And on June 30, we'll be at Boulder Creek Golf Club. These events are free. They begin at 6 p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. with a complimentary dinner. If you'd like to get more information or you'd like to register while we have capacity, all you have to do is visit the website, socialsecuritydinner.com. The website, again, socialsecuritydinner.com. I am pleased to have, as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial Radio program, Mr. William F. William Engdahl. Mr. Engdahl is a prolific author. He has been researching and writing about the world political scene for more than 30 years. His various books on geopolitics have been translated into 14 languages, from Chinese to French, from German to Japanese. And he has a very extensive resume, and I very much appreciate him being on the program today. So, William, welcome.
Glad to be with you.
William, could you tell the listeners about your most recent book? It's very timely.
It's called The Lost Hegemon, Whom the Gods Would Destroy, and the lost hegemon are the, what I call in another one of my books, the gods of money, the Wall Street bankers and the families behind them, with the usual names such as Rockefeller and whatnot. And what is happening in the last, the last 5 or 6 years, dramatically so, for them, is that they're losing their hegemony, their power to control world events. They're losing their power to ram through things like the trans-Pacific trade, the transatlantic trade and investment initiative here in Europe, between the Europe and the Obama administration. And they're losing wars everywhere. They've made a complete mess of the Arab Spring, which was their project, Hillary Clinton's project, actually, when she was Secretary of State. And what I describe in the book is the origins of U.S. State Department and intelligence community thinking it can use religion as a weapon, weaponize religion, and use it as a political instrument for regime change, for taking control of Middle East oil and so forth. And at this point, the Daesh, or ISIS as it's sometimes called, which was directly created out of Al-Qaeda, which in turn was directly created by a gentleman named Osama bin Laden during the Afghan-Soviet war during the 1980s. And Osama bin Laden, that was a big discussion in the U.S. Congress and Senate these days about releasing the 28 pages, the classified pages from the 9/11 report about the Saudis. Well, Osama bin Laden was a protege of Saudi and U.S. intelligence from almost the time he left the cradle. And he was sent by Saudi intelligence with cooperation of the CIA back in the 80s, or 79 actually, to be in Pakistan to recruit young jihadist lunatics to fight a so-called holy war. It's simply like a new version of the Holy Crusades, if anybody knows the real history of the Crusades. It was just a bloodbath for plunder and loot. And you can trace the lineage, which I do in the book, it's quite fascinating, from the origins of that al-Qaeda in Afghanistan in the 1980s into first Azerbaijan. They were flown by a CIA front airline company out of Afghanistan into Azerbaijan. Then from there, they were sent into Bosnia during the dismemberment of Yugoslavia, which was a U.S. intelligence operation under the Clinton administration, Bill Clinton. And let's hope that's the only Clinton administration the world will see. And from there, they've gone into the Middle East, into Syria, into Libya, into Egypt. And what's behind that is a death cult, and this is what I go into in great detail in the book, that was created in the 1920s in Egypt called the Muslim Brotherhood. So it's been used to instrumentalize and militarize the entire Middle East oil region so that the gods of money, the Wall Street banks and their friends and the oil companies can control totally world energy flows into the next decades. And it's failing. This is the interesting thing. That's why I titled the book The Lost Hegemon. They are increasingly without success in any of their operations. And this is the latest being the expose that Vladimir Putin made with his accepting the invitation of Bashar al-Assad, the president, the legitimate president, I might add, still today, of Syria, to come in and help combat terrorists. And the way that the Russians did that made a laughingstock out of Barack Obama because he was lying about, and the Pentagon was lying about combating ISIS or terrorists. They were just, what they were doing was increasing the areas that ISIS was controlling by claiming they were bombing. They were bombing Assad's army. So the book is very timely indeed. It has much to do with the attempts to control the oil price, which, as I said in a recent post on my website, it's broken. The Anglo-American oil market today is broken.
So, fascinating stuff, William. Let me just maybe back up, because we have maybe 4 minutes or so left in this segment. Can you, this may be a difficult question to answer, but can you capsulize, why is this shift in power now happening? What are the underlying causes?
The underlying causes are, just as the British Empire more than a century ago began terminal collapse, all empires are based on principles of continuous plunder or parasitism, like a cancer. And at a certain point, they have hollowed out the U.S. economy. They've bloated it with debt over, $19 trillion at this point. The countries that used to buy that debt, such as China or Russia, are not doing it anymore, or very, very minimal for technical reasons. And in fact, they are organizing to de-dollarize their economies and their trade, to trade oil in rubles and in renminbi, which is now becoming a very interesting international traded currency. And step by step, the U.S. is being outflanked by countries who want only the recognition of their national sovereignty. China is not invading any other country. Russia is not invading any other country. I've spent many, many times in both of those countries and talking with high-ranking people about what's really going on, and ordinary people as well. And the world is sick and tired of a bunch of bullies in Washington called neoconservatives. Excuse me if I'm stepping on your listeners' toes, but this is the reality. The military-industrial complex, they're simply the think tanks of the industrial complex of the military. They want to make wars everywhere, and the world is fed up with that. So, as a result, the industry of America has been outsourced. I grew up in the 50s when America was a great industrial nation. Detroit was the automaker of the world. It was called Motortown, USA. Today, Detroit is a tragedy, a human tragedy, a bankrupt human tragedy. The industrial know-how and technology of the U.S. has all been outsourced, or almost all. Sensitive military technology has to be imported from countries like China. What a bunch of lunatics we have running the Congress and the White House over the last three or more decades.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. I was reminded of a quote from Dwight Eisenhower, who I believe in his farewell speech warned of the military-industrial complex, and it seems like that rooster has come home to roost.
Very much so. But the problem is the military-industrial complex is so bloated with corruption and patronage and so forth. All-purpose jet project that is going to cost more than $1.4 trillion and probably won't work when it's finished, the F-35, things like this. They're just, you've got a self-feeding bureaucracy which survives on fears of war, and that's what they're feeding about Russia right now. That's not true. It's just not true. Well, but they would be chopped to bits with these budget cuts that are mandated in Washington. So the generals got together with the defense industry and said, okay, how can we up our budget here and force the next president to cut welfare and things like that, food stamps, in order to have more guns and weaponry. So we'll make a boogeyman out of Vladimir Putin as the next Adolf Hitler or some crazy thing like that. And because they have influence over the media, it's not the industrial companies like Boeing or McDonnell Douglas or Lockheed Martin. It's the families behind them, families like Rockefeller, like Buffett, like Bill Gates. George Soros is in there somewhere. He finances most of their color revolutions. And they're getting desperate to survive, and what is happening is much of the world is looking towards Eurasia. And this is economically, you may want to talk about this another time if you're interested. The future of the world economy in terms of recovery is not in the West. It's not in Europe. It's not in the United States. It's certainly not in Mexico and Canada and the United States as an entity. It's in Eurasia, and Eurasia is defined by what China and Russia, India, now Pakistan, and Iran are doing together with the Central Asian economies to build a network of high speed, and I mean really high speed, modern rail infrastructure that will link all of Eurasia, including, this is the interesting thing for your listeners, I'm sure, including rail links to the areas in Siberia, in eastern Siberia, that are known to have huge gold reserves but had no infrastructure because during the Soviet era, gold was considered a capitalist relic and wasn't needed for backing the ruble because the ruble wasn't exchangeable in international trade. They had to use dollars. So now they've realized that they're sitting literally on a gold mine, and China and Russia are accumulating gold like no other two countries in the world right now.
Yeah, and William, I'm going to have to leave it there. I'm right up against the end of a segment. We're going to have a conversation about gold in the next segment. So
yeah,
I'd encourage the listeners
to...
Not a problem. I encourage the listeners to stay tuned for that. Everything Financial Radio returns after these words. I'm Dennis Tubergen, and this is the Everything Financial Radio program. Glad you're listening in today. Hey, if you're not yet a subscriber to my Portfolio Watch newsletter, there's no reason not to be. It is free and is delivered to your email every Monday at 5 p.m. Eastern. In it, I give you my week's analysis of what's going on in the market as well as economic commentary. To subscribe, all you have to do is visit the website, yourportfoliowatch.com. That's Y-O-U-R, yourportfoliowatch.com. I'm very pleased to have on the program today William Engdahl. William's most recent book is titled The Lost Hegemon, Whom the Gods Would Destroy. It is available on Amazon. And actually, our guest on the program here a couple weeks ago, I see, has given you a nice endorsement. Mr. Jay Taylor said it's a must-read, and Jay's been on the program here just a couple weeks ago, so I'd encourage listeners to check that out. William, we've got very limited time in this segment, so let me jump right in. You wrote an article just a couple weeks ago. China quietly prepares golden alternative to dollar system. And on the program, we talked a couple weeks ago about China's new gold fix, if you will. Can you elaborate?
What China has been doing for several years now, China has been the most aggressive buyer of physical gold on the world market. Russia is very close behind. In fact, in some months, Russia is even greater than China. But the strategy in Beijing is clearly to not only make the renminbi a fully exchangeable international currency, which it's not quite yet, but they are clearly going to make the renminbi gold-backed, as a gold-backed currency, unlike the U.S. dollar, which since August 1971 has been backed by paper and the full faith and confidence of the United States government, which is sorely lacking nowadays in the world. So China aims to have a gold-backed renminbi at some point, and Russia does as well. Putin has made this clear in a number of remarks. And what they're doing is they've created the Shanghai Gold Exchange, and in May of last year, they created a state-run gold investment fund of $16 billion was subscribed, which made it the world's largest physical gold fund. And the purpose of that is to support gold mine projects along the new Silk Road, the new economic rail, high-speed railway, One Road, One Belt, as President Xi Jinping calls it, and to enable the Eurasian countries, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and so forth, along the so-called rail lines, to increase the gold backing of their currencies. So you can very quickly see, if you look at a map of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, I can imagine many people haven't heard about that in the United States, but it's one of the most significant international organizations on the map today. It wasn't always, but it certainly has become that in the last 2 years. It includes Russia and China, the two founding members, together with the Central Asian republics that used to be part of the Soviet Union, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, and so. And now, this year, almost 100% certainly, it will include Iran. And Iran is also joining the Silk Road Railway project with China. And so they are going to create a zone called Eurasia with or without the European Union. At this point, the European Union is becoming a disaster economically and bankrupt financially, as we saw with this Greek crisis, the way that clown show was done. So we're looking at the emergence. It may take several years. It may go much faster of the alternative to a paper dollar, a fiat dollar, being a group of currencies working in cooperation in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, backed all by gold. So you have an introduction not of the gold exchange standard of Bretton Woods in 1944, where the dollar was king, and then when Nixon realized that all the gold was being taken, they ripped up the Bretton Woods Treaty and said, we'll only give you paper dollars. This is going to be a solid basis for a new monetary center of gravity, let's call it, a multipolar world center of gravity. And excuse me, the China-Shanghai Gold Exchange is now up and running, and they are creating a gold fix in Shanghai to rival the gold fix, which is a fixed gold fix, I might add, in London, the London Gold Fix Banks of the London Bullion Market Committee, and the COMEX in New York. So, and this will be done with physical gold backing, not ETFs or paper gold. So I think there's very, very hopeful developments on the horizon coming from that part of the world.
Well, we are chatting today with Mr. William Engdahl. His book is The Lost Hegemon. I would encourage you to check it out. And, William, unfortunately, we are out of time, but I would love to have you back at some future point if you'd be open to that.
I'm certainly open. I'd love to.
Well, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
I'm pleased to have as a first-time guest on the Everything Financial radio program a man that undoubtedly many of you are familiar with. Mr. Robert Kiyosaki is a multiple best-selling author. He's probably best known for his Rich Dad, Poor Dad series, one that I have personally enjoyed. His most recent book is titled Second Chance. We're going to chat with him about that on today's program. And, Robert, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Dennis. Keep up the good work.
Well, thank you. Well, Robert, tell us about your book, Second Chance. What's the premise of the book?
Well, you know, every boom is followed by a bust. And we've been in a boom cycle since 1971, and it started to bust in 2000 with the dot-com bust. But more than that, you know, it's the world is changing with technology. So this idea, the old financial advice of go to school, get a job, work hard, save money, get out of debt, invest for the long term in the stock market, is really obsolete advice. And that's why I started writing Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which was in 1997. And I'm very critical of our academic system, not only because they have no financial education in schools, but it pumps out people like Greenspan and Bernanke and now Janet Yellen. And we have these academics who really have no real-world experience running the economy. So Second Chance is about just charts on it. You can look at the 120-year chart of the Dow and things like this. It's, you know, a picture's worth 1,000 words, so I have a lot of pictures in there. And a person can make up their own mind about what they should do in the future. And that's what the Second Chance is about. If you're going back to school to look for a high-paying job, you might be in fairy dust land, you know. If you're hoping that the stock market will keep going up, you may as well go be dancing with the pixies. And you think that saving money is going to save you with negative interest rates, you got to be crazy. So everything about the Second Chance is about why it's different and, you know, things you can do.
So, Robert, you know, how insane are negative interest rates? Is this just a last gasp effort of desperate central bankers around the world?
Your answer is as good as mine on this one. You know, they're out of bullets, and they're now, as Mohammed El Arian says, they're now trying things they've never tried before. To me, it's like, you know, once I was up in Portland, Oregon, with a California car, which meant I didn't have snow tires on, and I was coming down this hill. And I found out why snow tires and a four-wheel drive help you, because the car started to go down the hill without me. And, you know, I was swerving to left and right, and thank God I missed everything. I don't know how I did it for about probably 500 yards. But I think that's where central bankers are right now. They're basically with a car that's out of control, and they don't know what to do, so they're swerving left and swerving right, trying this, trying that. And I think negative interest rates is just one more thing they're trying.
So, Robert, do you have a sense or a feel as to, in your view, how this plays out? I mean, all the quantitative easing, I think the Federal Reserve has printed now almost $5 trillion out of thin air since the financial crisis. They haven't done it in a while. We still have interest rates at 0%, and I'm reminded of what the late economist Herbert Stein said. He said, if something cannot go on forever, it will stop. I think we all agree it will stop, but what does it look like when it stops?
Well, you know, you and I don't know. The central banks, you know, starting in 87 is when the Greenspan put sort of took hold. And in 87, the central bank and then the investment banks of Wall Street and the government got together and they said, let's blow this baby up. Let's create this economy that everybody wants. And the trouble is the economy only worked up until 2000, and now it's not working. So the, it wasn't even quantitative easing. It was just pure out-and-out greed. And it basically ripped off, as we all know, it ripped off the poor and middle class. So I could see that, and that's why I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad in 1997, exactly when Greenspan was talking about irrational exuberance, and everybody was calling him the maestro. And then in 2000, the dot-com, 2005, the real estate, and then 2008, the banking crash. We've had three major crashes in the first 10 years of this century. Three major crashes. 1,000 times bigger, and this is in second chance, 1,000 times bigger than the 1929 crash.
And
we're going out of control. So that's why I write and I speak and I go up against the grain of conventional wisdom. You know, why would you go to school when you learn nothing about money? It doesn't make sense to me. Why would you save money when the government prints money? Why would you invest for the long term when the Dow is at an all-time high? It's not logical.
Robert, it's so logical when we hear you say that. So let me ask you this. Let's take someone who, say, tried to retire in 2005, 2006, when you could still earn maybe a halfway decent yield on a fixed interest investment like a CD. Those days are gone. As you said, the policy is really hurting the people that we should be rewarding for trying to save and get ahead. What options are out there for someone like that?
Well, that's what Second Chance is about, and all of my Rich Dad books are about. It's about, look at the, you know, all coins have three sides, heads, tails, and the edge of the coin. And all I do is I stand on the edge and I look at which side is best for me. So ever since I was a young man, once I realized after 1971 that we could print money and the dollar became debt, I started using debt as money. So I acquire real estate and everything with debt, 100% debt. I'm 100% leveraged all the time. Of course, I'm pretty good at it, but I use debt as money. And then when interest rates went, you know, I remember in 1970, interest rates were about 15%. And as the interest rates kept coming down, I thought I died and went to heaven. And yet everybody's going to savings as markets are crashing, and I'm going to debt. So today I refinance $750 million from 5% down to 3%. I made so much money just chasing debt, the interest rates on debt.
So, Robert, what I hear you saying is that you're really taking these paper assets and you're using them to put it into something tangible. Is that an oversimplistic analogy?
It's pretty accurate, but it's not just tangible. It's income-producing, long-term, stable. They're called apartment houses. I mean, think, just do the math on it. You know, if I was paying 5% on $750 million, how much am I paying at 3%?
I think the answer is a lot less.
It went down so low, I'm going, holy mackerel. Meanwhile, everybody's trying to pay off their debt. They're going to cash. I just don't understand that behavior, but I don't recommend what I do either.
Well, we are chatting today with Mr. Robert Kiyosaki. His latest book is Second Chance, and I will continue my conversation with Mr. Kiyosaki when Everything Financial Radio returns. Stay with us. You are listening to the Everything Financial Radio program. I'm your host, Dennis Tubergen. And I'll be continuing my conversation with Robert Kiyosaki momentarily. However, before I get back to that conversation, let me remind you, just in case you might be just joining us, that we have a couple of Social Security maximization workshops coming up during the month of June. On Thursday, June the 16th, we'll be at Stonewater Country Club. That's out on Kalamazoo Avenue Southeast in Caledonia Township. And on June the 30th, we'll be at Boulder Creek Golf Club. That's in Belmont. The workshops begin at 6 p.m. and conclude at 7:30 p.m. with a complimentary dinner. If you're between the ages of 55 and 69, I would encourage you to attend. You can get more information at socialsecuritydinner.com. I have the distinct pleasure of chatting today with Mr. Robert Kiyosaki. Many of you are undoubtedly familiar with his work. He has been writing Rich Dad, Poor Dad since 1997, a number of books in that series. I have enjoyed them very much. And Robert, in the last segment, we talked about your book, Second Chance. You also have another book prior to that titled Rich Dad's Prophecy. And tell the listeners about Rich Dad's Prophecy.
Well, I could see this crisis coming back in 83. So, you know, anybody could see it because, well, first of all, there was a thing in 1974 called the petrodollar, and that was a deal cut with Saudi Arabia that every barrel of oil throughout the world had to be traded in dollars, U.S. dollars. And that gave us a boom, plus in 1978 was the 401K, which meant every worker now was on their own. And then all this stuff started to happen, so I could just see it coming. And then Rich Dad's Prophecy actually bounced off of the 401K Criminal Act. I predicted, my Rich Dad actually predicted that the stock market would crash violently in 2016. And it was based upon several things. One was demographics on top of the market gyrations, but also terrorism. So I could see all of that back in 1983, 84. I could see it just coming. So I wrote Rich Dad's Prophecy. It was published officially in 2002, and I called for a crash of 2016, but I said there would be a crash prior to 2016. And that crash came in 2007 and 2008 with a real estate subprime crash and then the banking crash. So we're on schedule for the biggest crash of all right now.
You know, Robert, you probably saw that former Dallas Federal Reserve Bank President Richard Fisher said in an interview that the Fed literally dumped $1 trillion into the stock market because they wanted to create a wealth effect. So isn't this whole market thing really kind of rigged for the benefit of the bankers?
Well, not only the bankers, but their friends, you know. Yeah, I just read David Stockman's book, The Great Deformation, and he talks about how, I think, John Mack, who's I think he's Morgan Stanley, one of those guys. I mean, the Fed bailed out John Mack's wife to the tune of $200 million. I mean, they just bailed all their friends out. They didn't need the money. And there was no really crisis. It was just a crisis in the banking industry. But if you read Ed Griffin's book, The Creature from Jekyll Island, which was published in 94.
Great book.
He always said bailout was the name of the game anyway. And so the rich get in trouble, and then the Fed bails them out. And that's the name of the game. So when I saw, you know, Bernanke running around with his hair on fire, which he doesn't have any hair, and he and Hank Paulson saying this economy is going to go down, I knew they were setting it up for another bailout of the rich. But it screws the poor and middle class. And now we have Bernie Sanders saying, you know, wealth and income inequality is the greatest moral crisis facing America today. It's basically America is no longer a democracy. America is a kleptocracy. And we rip off the poor people, or not even the poor people, the unfinancially sophisticated people. So no wonder, you know, guys like Trump are kicking butt and Bernie's kicking butt. And, you know, it's a Jerry Springer show as far as I'm concerned.
So when you take a look at, you know, what's happening now with Fed policy, there's talk about even negative interest rates here. I mean, do you see this whole thing just collapsing again?
Well, it goes back to the 74 petrodollar. You know, what happened is the petrodollar came. The reason petrodollar is important to understand is, if take Japan, if you wanted to buy oil, you had to have dollars. So the only way Japan could get dollars was to ship us Sonys and Toyotas. And so we shipped them these bogus dollars. It blew their economy into a bubble. So that was the Japan crisis. They collapsed. They've never recovered from that. And then there was a Southeast Asian thing, same thing. They shipped us a lot of goods. We shipped them bogus dollars. They ballooned. And then now there's China and there's Europe. And America's next. It's a bubble and then a bust. So we're on this bust right now. We're going down. So that's why, you know, I'm not the most popular guy on financial television. Because if you're in the stock market, you got to be crazy. You know, we're at all-time highs, higher than 2008. And nothing has changed, and the number of derivative positions and contracts has ballooned. In 2007, there was $700 trillion in derivative contracts, and today it's estimated as 1.2 quadrillion derivative contracts ready to explode. And Buffett called them weapons of mass financial destruction. They propped this baby up. And all these baby boomers in 2016, the first one turned 70, and the 401k requires them to withdraw their money, and so the government can get its tax dollars back. That's how I see it. I could be wrong because I'm not on the inside. But I see this as one big con job.
So let's go back to the petrodollar, Robert. And if you're just joining us today, we're chatting with Robert Kiyosaki. His latest book is Second Chance. You know, when you look at what's happening around the world, just in April, China opened its own gold market to price gold in the Chinese currency, the renminbi. So there's an alternative to the dollar. You're seeing that Russia is taking huge market share away from Saudi Arabia, selling China oil because they'll take the Chinese currency and they can bypass the dollar. This trend away from the dollar seems to be intensifying. Is the dollar close to losing its petrodollar status?
Well, you should ask ISIS that. God, they're funded with oil. I mean, oil has been money since the World War I. And if you understand that, Pearl Harbor was attacked because the U.S. cut off Japan from oil. Vietnam was about oil. Saddam Hussein was taken out because in 1999, when the euro came online, Saddam says, oh, I'm going to sell Iraqi oil in euro. Boom, he's dead, And then Gaddafi says he's going to sell his oil in gold-backed dinars. Boom, he's dead. So just look at, just coincidences maybe, but look at it and go, holy moly. So Russia has no love for us. China has no love for us. Muslims have no love for us. Saudi Arabia has no love for us. And I think we're fighting to keep the hegemony, the power of the dollar up right now. So the question is, how long can petrodollars be the reserve currency of the world? And if the central banks of the world decide they don't want to hold U.S. dollars anymore, then those dollars would come rushing home, and who knows what that'll create, either hyperinflation or hyper-collapse. I don't know what's going to happen. So that's why 74, when Nixon signed a deal with Saudi Arabia, he said, I will protect you from the Jews, because they didn't. So Saudi Arabia was afraid of the Jews because in 67 the Jews kicked their butts in the Six-Day War. So everybody was afraid that Israel was now going to go and take over their oil fields. So Saudi Arabia cut a deal with Nixon and Kissinger saying, we agree to sell all oil in dollars. And that gave America such power, the economy boomed. So there's many things that caused the boom. But today, most central banks are holding dollars, not gold. And why do they have to hold dollars? Because the IMF and World Bank will not lend them money unless they hold dollars. So this whole thing is, in my opinion, just this big printed money scheme, a Ponzi scheme.
So, Robert, you described a scenario that if the dollar loses reserve status to any great extent, a lot of these dollars that we have, as you said in our first segment, printed and exchanged for real tangible goods are going to come back. We're going to see inflation or potentially hyperinflation should that happen. So in your books, are you advising people to think about owning some metals as well?
Well, I've always been a gold bug, and every time the price of gold goes down, I buy more because I don't trust ETFs, by the way. I like gold, so I hold them in a very safe spot. And I'm just waiting for the demise of the U.S. dollar. But as you know, I don't know if you know this, but if I sell gold, the tax department taxes me at the highest rate possible. They don't want gold. The Fed does not want gold in the economy. So I look at all that stuff, and then I say, whatever they don't want me to do, I'll probably do. I don't trust academics. My poor dad was an academic, and these guys actually, they're like Bernanke and some of these guys running, Obama, they actually think they're intelligent. And they think their intelligence can control the world economy. Well, unfortunately, those days are gone, sweetheart. You're not that smart anymore. So when I looked at Bernanke's actions, I'm going, that man was basically a math teacher from Princeton. He's not an economist. He doesn't really know that much. And what he was trying to do was prevent the last depression. So you know that old saying, the generals fight the last war? Well, Bernanke fought the last depression by printing money. And I know everybody says, my friends, you're not right. They didn't print money. They just lowered the interest rates on the long bond and all this. Yeah, good. Give me a break.
Exactly.
It's called the Greenspan put. We back up your mistakes. We bail you out if you screw up. That's the deal.
Yeah, well, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest today has been Mr. Robert Kiyosaki. His most recent book of many is Second Chance. I'd encourage you to pick it up. And, Robert, a real pleasure to talk with you. I've been a fan for a long time, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Dennis. Thanks for the time.
Well, that just about concludes the Everything Financial Radio program for this week. Hope you got something you can use. And, by the way, if you'd like to go back and listen to any of the interviews that I conduct with our guest experts, it's easy to do. Just go to everythingfinancialradio.com, and all the interviews are posted there. If you'd like to subscribe to the Everything Financial Radio podcast, simply go to iTunes and search under Everything Financial Radio. Again, that's our program for this week. Hope you got something you can use. I'll be back here again next week, same time. Talk to you then.